If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
We are back with another week of shows, the Kyle Anselone Show, and I am really excited for the topic that we have to break down today. For years, we have seen growing interest and betting on online markets like Polymarket and Clashy. And at first, this is mainly betting on elections, which is actually really interesting. If I have no idea who's going to win the Minnesota Senate race or something like that, I can either look at a bunch of polls that are often organized by Democrats or Republicans and then try to break down what that means. Or I could go to Polymarket and see what people are betting on. And a lot of times in these minor races, it's a much faster way to get an idea of what the situation is actually going on in that state. And so this has gotten a lot more interest. But as that's happened, there's been a lot more betting on war-related issues. Will a conflict happen? Will the U.S. bomb Iran or Venezuela? What's happening in the war in Ukraine? When is Russia taking territory? And as this is happening, I start to wonder, to what extent is the potential to win money actually going to influence foreign policy decisions? Not just maybe people taking advanced information and using it to win money, but when can they actually direct policy to make money? So to answer some of these questions, I have Nick Cleveland Stout returning to the show today. He is one of the research associates at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, an absolute must read every single day. Nick covers a wide range of very interesting topics, but he is one of the first people I saw in the independent media to actually do a real good investigative piece on gambling, on Polymarket, on war-related issues. So, Nick, welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me, Kyle.
Absolutely. Very happy to have you back. I've actually wanted to interview you about this for a month. And actually, over the past month, this story has just kept getting more and more interesting. So, I want to break down a few aspects of it with you today, including what is the problem? There was a big bet on Venezuela. Who wants war in Venezuela and Trump's oil scheme for the country? So want to start off here with the article. You wrote this probably midway through December of last year. Think tanker altered Ukraine war map before big Polymarket payout. And so just, Nick, kind of remind us of what happened here. You know, how did somebody try to make money off the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, so there was this specific instance. There was a market. There's a bunch of markets on Polymarket that, you know, say, you know, is Russia going to take this town in eastern Ukraine or that town? And more importantly, when? And so in this instance, there was a town by the name of Mirnohrad in eastern Ukraine. And there was a ton of activity on this market right before one of the payout dates. The way these market works is it'll say, you know, is Russia going to take Mir Nohrad on November 15th? Is it going to take it on November 31st? And so people can bet accordingly. And there was a lot of activity in the days leading up to November 15th, which was one of these payout dates. Someone had said, yes, Russia's going to take this town, even though in the immediate days leading up to it, it really didn't seem likely at all. So it was trading like 99 cents to one, meaning if you bet that Russia would take this town, you would gain a lot of money. I think I calculated it, and it's like if you made the bet at the right time, you could earn something like 33,000% profit. Sure enough, the market ended up settling in favor of Russia taking this town. But the only problem with that is that that actually didn't reflect what had happened on the ground, at least according to best sources. And Polymarket and Kalshi, a lot of these prediction markets, will oftentimes rely on third parties in order to settle these markets. And so in this case, Polymarket was relying on maps that are provided by the Institute for the Study of War, which is a prominent U.S. think tank that has really kind of shot into popularity and into the mainstream because of these maps that they create, live maps about especially the war in Ukraine, but they have them for several conflicts now. And they provide details using geospatial technology, and they have teams of researchers that update these maps regularly. And so what happened in this instance is the Institute for the Study of War, someone that worked there, appears to have altered the map to show that the Russian forces had taken this very specific intersection in the town of Mir Nohrad on November 15th. And the reason we know this was, it's very likely this was a case of insider trading, I should say, is because the next day the map had gone back to the original version. And the Institute for the Study of War even had to issue a statement basically saying that this was an error and that it's been returned to its original map.
Yeah, so this is really crazy because this is a major city in the Donbass, right? There's a lot of attention paid.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just some village and, oh, what's the big deal? Nobody pays attention to it. But, you know, the fall of this city does have an impact probably on the ongoing negotiations and other things involving this war. And this starts to raise, I think, some ethical questions, even for people like me and you, right, who cover this stuff very closely. And so we may have an idea or better knowledge than most people as to when things are going to happen in Ukraine or the Middle East or Latin America. And it really would seem like unethical to me to try to use that information or just to gamble on war at all, right? You know, this is people's lives who are being lost, and you want Russia to conquer the territory in order to get a payout on a betting site. So what is there any like legislation around this or any rules, like working at Quincy, is there like an expectation that you wouldn't place money on a bet on the war in Ukraine on Polymarket, or what do you think about all that?
It's a really good question. I think, in terms of regulation right now, this is really the Wild West. It's currently regulated by the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which doesn't really address things like insider trading, because it considers this a prediction market. Because of that, you know, they get around like a lot of the statewide regulation that there would be for gambling and things like that. But on an institutional level, I think that we're going to start to see more places develop policies. I mean, I haven't really heard that much about think tanks that have policies against placing these kinds of bets or government agencies. I mean, it's possible that here and there they have these policies in place, but I think especially as these cases of insider trading starts to become more you know, becomes more normalized, we might see places want to put in policies that prevent employees from trading on knowledge that they know. But it's important to note at the same time, the insider trading aspect is actually like on purpose a feature, not a bug of the system. The CEOs, and they don't consider it insider trading to be clear, because that, you know, implies illegality, and it's not it's just regulated by the CFTC, which doesn't have rules for insider trading for prediction markets. So but the CEOs of these companies, they want to commodify everything, and you see them actually partnering with a lot of traditional media organizations because they see their role largely as a form of news. Their idea is like, if there are people that are insider trading, that will help us know kind of what's happening on the ground. It's like a way to, the argument is that it's a way of getting the news of tomorrow today. Like you can, you know, read about something in the New York Times, or you can see where people are putting their money and try and get a sense of like what's actually going to happen in the future. And in the case of like who's going to win Mr. Beast Squid Games, like the stakes might not be that high. You might just spoil your reality show that you're watching. But like there are real outcomes for this when it comes to, this instance with ISW or some of these other war related bets.
Absolutely. So let's get into one of those other war related bets, because the first story with ISW is nefarious, but it is somebody outside of government just manipulating a map to win money. I mean, I don't know how different this is. Like, I know they hold bets on what the high temperature is going to be in New York City than somebody at the weather service, like turning it up a tenth of a degree in order to win the bet. Right. But Nets, this is in the Washington Post, a $400,000 payout after Maduro's capture is putting prediction markets in the spotlight. Last week, an anonymous trader pocketed more than $400,000 after betting that Maduro was soon beat out of office. The bulk of the trader's bids on the platform Polymarket were made in the mere hours before President Donald Trump announced the surprise nighttime raid that led to Maduro's capture, fueling online suspicions of potential insider trading because of the timing of the wagers and the traders' narrow activity on the platform. So, Nick, what do you think about this, actually betting that Maduro's going to be removed and seemingly on information that raid was about to take place?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about an operation like that, I mean, okay, my first reaction to that news is like, wow, it's amazing that there weren't leaks about it happening beforehand. Congress was left in the dark on this operation. But if you paid attention, and you know, I'm sure some you know the higher ups at Kalshi or Polymarket will run with this as like a selling point. But if you paid attention at the right time to those prediction markets, you might actually get a sense of like what might be happening in Venezuela. And you know, if you think about an operation like Operation Absolute Resolve on January 2nd, I believe it was. Something like that involves so many different people, right? There's obviously the special forces, there's the people that are on the ground, U.S. military, but then we also learned that like New York Times, Washington Post knew about this in advance but decided not to act on it, and then Trump also, according to him, told the oil companies, although they have denied this. And so if you think about all the people, and then, of course, the people in the Trump administration, you know, there are a lot of people that had advanced knowledge of this. And it's anyone's guess. First of all, you know, could be a coincidence that someone made this, ridiculous bet and made out with $400,000 at the right time. But assuming it's not a coincidence, there are a lot of people that could have been. But I do think it is just amazing that like, you know, that's my first reaction is that we only found out about this raid after the fact. But again, if you looked at Polymarket or Kalshi at the right time, like you could actually get a sense of what was gonna happen here.
Yeah. Well, I would have to imagine that at least the Department of War should be concerned about this, because, you know, if other people could figure it out this way. I'm sure, say, China would have like the capabilities and the data mining capabilities and then the AI to process that information in order to, like, you know, be triggered when these kind of events are happening and whether, you know, they need to be on heightened concern. So this seems like it could be a real way that maybe the administration's hand is being tipped, not just to Americans. And look, you know, you could say, well, this could benefit journalists, but journalists knew about beforehand and decided not to run the story because, you know, we don't have a real journalist in this country for the most part. It's left to the independent media like yourself and so many of your great colleagues over at Quincy, but just who don't have that same access and resources that the New York Times and Washington Post do to nail down these stories ahead of time. So do you think, have you seen any concern around this that, hey, this could be a real giveaway to the Russians or the Chinese if they figure out how to kind of design some algorithms to get the data and then process it and figure out what the U.S. government is doing?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine they must be. I'm sure they have other, probably more effective of ways of doing that too. But, you know, it's definitely one way to monitor these sites and see where people are placing their bets. You know, it's also, you know, the people that are like that are on these sites because they have some money to throw around. You know, they might casually follow news events. You know, it's important to know, you know, and yes, of course, there are lots of ethical considerations around betting, specifically around war. I mean, it's I should know, like, you know, it is fairly dystopian that we are in a world in which, like, everything is commodified. I mean, like you were saying at the outset, I remember when prediction markets were really just about, you know, who's going to win this midterm election, which senator is going to lose his seat. And, you know, I paid pretty close attention to those back in the day, just sort of as like a way of getting a sense of, like, you know, where are people actually putting their money? Like, it is useful in a sense in terms of what might actually happen. But, you know, when insider trading is so rampant, you know, it is oftentimes like these retail investors, and, you know, some people might not feel bad for them, especially the ones that are gambling on war so openly. But those are the ones that are losing a lot of money on these kinds of bets.
Yeah. So I'm more, you know, you're in Washington. How prevalent do you think gambling on these sites is among particularly the members of the administration over the past week? You know, I've gone on Polymarket to see what kind of bets they're taking on U.S. politics. Mm-hmm. There's bets on what words Trump will use in Ed's speech, how many times he'll say some certain person's name, what country we're going to invade next or bomb next or when we're going to bomb Iran or how many whatever's happening in Iran or Gaza, things like that. But also just how long his speech is going to be or how long a certain address is going to be. And I actually saw speculation that the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, cut off his speech just 5 seconds before one of the cutoff times, and somebody won a little bit of money on that. So, you know, how prevalent do you think this is? Widespread, problematic?
Oh, it's so widespread. You know, and if you, I mean, it's like you said, like, if you pay attention to this stuff, and especially if you're, and that's why I think it's important for think tanks, media outlets to and private companies to all kind of have policies around this kind of thing, because it is so widespread and there is so much insider trading taking place. And, you know, if you just pay attention to this stuff and work in this area, you're probably going to be privy to some information at one point or another that in theory you could trade on Polymarket or Kalshi. Because there are just so many markets. I mean, there's markets, you know, will a nuclear war break out in 2027? There are markets on, you know, when is Israel going to strike Gaza? There are markets on, yeah, like you said, you know, how is Trump going to mention China in a speech? Or, you know, how long is this press conference going to last? And I think what... you know, obviously insider trading is one concern, but I think another one is like, and we saw this with the case of the Institute for the Study of War in the map in Ukraine, is like real, we might see third parties actually change events in order to win poly market. So it's like, you know, not instances where you know there's going to be a certain outcome and you bet on it, but you actually alter reality because everyone is certain that one outcome is going to happen and you have the power, you have the levers of power in order to change that outcome. I mean, for instance, I'll just give one example. Like I saw, you know, there was a market about, is in the conflict between Thailand and Cambodia, which of these two countries is going to control this temple? Will Thailand control this certain temple that's close to the border? And if you look at like the description for how to resolve that market, all the Thai government has to do is just say that they control it. Like Cambodia doesn't have to do anything, and it doesn't matter what's happening on the ground. But if the Thai government says that they control it, and all that would take is just some government official saying, you know, releasing a press statement saying, "Hey, we control this temple now," then they could get a big payout on Polymarket. So I think we're going to see some instances like that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, I want to talk to you about what are probably going to be some much bigger payouts, and that is who is interested in actually the U.S. fighting a war in Ukraine or occupying Ukraine, controlling, I'm sorry, not Ukraine, Venezuela. And you wrote this very good article, I believe last week for Quincy. Experts at oil and weapons funded think tanks go big in Venezuela. So, Nick, who do you think are the interests pushing for the U.S. to intervene in Venezuela and who are probably very happy about Trump's raid on Maduro?
I mean, first and foremost, the defense contractors. This is a big win for them, I should say at the outset, before getting into oil companies and all that. You know, at the presser after the operation, then you had General Kane listing all of the different military equipment that took part of this operation, 150 aircraft, special operations. And you had Trump on Truth Social just days later saying that we should raise the defense budget to $1.5 trillion. I have a hard time thinking that those two events are not correlated. You know, he's seen what he sees as this big success in ousting Maduro. You know, forget the costs of war, the costs of lives that were lost along the way as well. This is a big win in his mind for militarism. You know, he wants to try. He's already looking to other countries to replicate this, and of course, the benefactors of that will be defense contractors. You know, it's going to be the Lockheed Martins of the world. Raytheon seems to be on the outs a bit. You know, he had a post saying that they haven't been producing as much as he'd like, but you know, Palantir, all these companies are—it's a big boon for their bottom line for sure. But this article was really about the oil companies in particular, and you know, you have like ex-Chevron executives that are already raising funds to go in and invest in Venezuela. You know, there's a guy who says he already has $2 billion ready to go. You know, Paul Singer, who is a described kind of as a vulture capitalist for picking up distressed assets in developing countries that are kind of forced sales to his firm. And he picked up in November Citgo, which is this subsidiary of the Venezuelan state-owned oil company, PDVSA. It owns a bunch of really important refineries along the Gulf Coast, and it can refine some 800,000 barrels of oil per day. And I should say, you know, Singer is a very close ally of Trump. He gave $5 million to Trump the last cycle, and he's already donated a ton of money to $1 million to try and defeat Massey in Kentucky as well. And he's also a strong Rubio ally. The two of them go way back. Rubio has helped through a sale from or a payment from the government of Argentina to him and several other creditors as well. And so, by all accounts, this acquisition of Citgo for Singer was a bargain. You know, it still needs approval from. There's some debate about, you know, what to do with Citgo. You have a lot of competing interests there, but Paul Singer is certainly a benefactor. And then when it comes to the major oil companies themselves, you know, Exxon, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, there's kind of this diversion where you have some companies that that are really excited about this, that are looking to expand operations. Chevron has said that they are going to expand their production by 50% in less than 2 years in Venezuela, because Chevron, unlike the other companies, it stayed in Venezuela. It continued to work with the Venezuelan state-owned oil company as a minority stakeholder. But the other majors, ConocoPhillips and Exxon, have taken a different approach. They're much more reticent to go back into Venezuela when they've had their assets expropriated. They want to have commitments from Trump and from the Venezuelan government that wouldn't happen again. And so, you know, I was kind of pointing out that there are a lot of oil interests at stake here too, which you know hasn't really gotten much attention.
Right. Now, I want to get into Donald Trump's actual plan for Venezuela, so I got a quick clip of the president to play.
Venezuela has also agreed that the United States will immediately begin refining and selling up to 50 million barrels of Venezuelan crude oil, which will continue indefinitely. We're all set to do it. We have the refining capacity. It was actually based very much on the Venezuelan oil, which is a heavy oil, very good oil, great oil. It's fantastic for certain things like asphalt roads.
So, Nick, I've been really trying to figure out what is Donald Trump's actual plan for Venezuela, because he's not putting boots on the ground, at least not yet. He has posted on his Truth Social that he's the acting president of the country. He's kind of made Marco Rubio his viceroy and also suggested that Rubio is going to be president of Cuba at some point in the future. So I guess he'll just be ruling the Latin American fiefdom or something like this. But the idea of actually being able to take Venezuelan oil and somehow make it profitable for the United States seems absolutely absurd to me. Do you understand what Trump's actual plan is here? And do you think it has any chances of being successful?
Yeah, I mean, so much remains to be seen. But, you know, his basic plan, like, it seems like he wants to run Venezuela as if it were a colony, as if it were a protectorate, while not having boots on the ground, you know, which is kind of an interesting proposition. I mean, he wants to flex the power of the United States, treat the new acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, as if she were a puppet of the United States, without actually controlling the government. Which, you know, and just having this threat hanging above her of, you know, if you do not do as we tell you to, if you do not, you know, allow these companies to come back in, if you do not give us all of your oil revenue, all of these demands that he's been making, then, you know, look what happened to Nicolas Maduro, and we can do the same to you. And that's kind of the threat that he's banking on. Because he knows that having boots on the ground, you know, permanent military force in Venezuela, I think would be a very difficult political proposition. And so, you know, he's testing out this middle ground. And I think for Delcy Rodriguez, it's this balancing act, right? Where, you know, she can't. Disavow the Trump administration for fear of something like what happened to Maduro happening to her. But at the same time, you know, she has her own constituency to think about. And she's not just going to, like the Citgo sale is a good example. You know, she's not just going to roll over. You know, she said that she doesn't recognize the sale of Citgo to Paul Singer. She says that, you know, it was sold for far too cheap, that some of that revenue has to come back to Venezuela. So she has to do these things because otherwise she's going to lose the legitimacy of the Venezuelan state and of the Venezuelan people. But you know, for right now, in terms of what's going to happen, Trump is making a lot of promises. He's trying to get the oil companies to go back in to invest billions and billions of dollars, and it will take a lot of money if they're going to get up and running. back to, you know, peak Venezuelan oil production. You know, last year, late 2025, I think Venezuela was only producing around 900,000 barrels of oil a year, which is like four times less than its peak several decades ago. And so, you know, to get it back up and running to those levels will take a lot of investment. I've seen some estimates of like, you know, maybe $100 billion over the course of a decade. And, you know, he's kind of been unclear about like what the incentives are for the oil companies themselves. You know, Chevron's excited about this. Shell has said that it's going to invest. You know, some smaller oil companies have said that they are going to invest as well. But it's a real mixed bag. And I think, you know, and especially making these promises of like reimbursement, which is a big word that's been thrown around over the last few days, of like him saying that the U.S. government will reimburse the investments made. I'm not sure that's a winning proposition politically either. You know, if you're telling the U.S. taxpayer that you're essentially subsidizing these major oil companies that are already worth hundreds of billions of dollars, that's a difficult political message to sell back home.
Yeah, well, it seems Trump has really put himself in a bad position where now by kidnapping Nicolas Maduro, he can't even make a deal with Maduro, which at least for the oil companies would probably come with a good amount of stability insurance that, you know, there's not going to be a revolution or uprising in Ukraine, especially if Donald Trump tells them that the U.S. will stop backing the Venezuelan opposition and agitating for his overthrow. He'll probably have a pretty solid grip on power. Nick, thank you so much for joining the show today. I can't tell you how long I've been paying attention to the Polymarket and Kalshi trend and how I've really been concerned that one day policy could not only be exposed but also influenced through the betting markets. And you are one of the few people who I've seen do a good investigative report on this and the problems with it. So keep up the good work. You and your colleagues at Quincy are doing an amazing job, and I'll definitely have you back on the show again.
I appreciate that, Kyle. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. I take off?
Yeah.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.